Now, I don't like to get political, especially on here, but today I might have to, and I'll explain and so much more on today's edition of Locked In LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts, and we are on YouTube as well. Just search Locked On LSU in the search bar and hit that subscribe button, and you won't miss a single second of your Locked On LSU content. My name is Caroline Fenton, and I am your host, as I am every day. Graduated from LSU, been covering LSU since 2016, and I'm now a sports talk radio host in Nashville. Before I get into my political soapbox, I got to let y'all know that today's edition of Locked On LSU is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. So I'm just totally kidding with you guys. I'm not getting political here. But last night was the presidential State of the Union, so I only figured that it would be appropriate if I gave my own State of the Union as president of Locked On LSU. My own State of the Union for three LSU sports programs. Where we're at, what questions we might have moving forward, what we can grow from. So let's get into it. Let's start with it. My official State of the Union for LSU football. So I think there's a whole lot. I know that there is a whole lot to feel good about with this football team. You know, 10-4 in Brian Kelly's first season. You beat Alabama. You have a trip to Atlanta for the SEC championship. Hard not to feel good about that. Hard not to feel good about Brian Kelly's first season when my expectation was really like a 7-5. Not my hope, but my expectation. You know, I said this at SEC Media Days. I said I wouldn't be surprised if LSU goes 10-2. Or if LSU goes 6-6. I thought, you know, the ceiling is so incredibly high, but the floor is also low. A first-year head coach coming in. You don't bring back a ton of starters. You absolutely are bringing back a core in B.J. Ojulari and Kayshon Booty, but the quarterback, there was a quarterback question. Almost the entire secondary needed to be retooled. So I think it wouldn't necessarily be fair of me to say that in July that the floor was like 6-6 and then turn around and you go 9-3 in the regular season. And then I all of a sudden say that's not good enough. That's not fair of me at all. Going 10-4 in Brian Kelly's first season absolutely is exceeding expectations. Beating Nick Saban in Alabama in his first year absolutely is exceeding expectations. Winning the SEC West and punching your ticket to Atlanta absolutely exceeds expectations. So, yeah, you would have liked to have been a little bit more competitive in that game. Yeah, you probably should have beaten Texas A&M, a team that won 5 games this past year. Probably should have beaten that team. You probably should have, you know, gotten a little bit more up for that game. So those are absolutely going to be blemishes on this first season. But looking at it from a 360-foot view, looking at it at a macro perspective and comparing at least my expectations versus the outcome, absolutely feel good about this team. And you even feel good about it moving forward. A top 10 recruiting class in the country, the top transfer portal class in the country. Hard not to feel good about that. But in terms of the State of the Union, my biggest question is, what's next? How can you build upon what you did in year one? Because now, you know, going into the 2022 season, I had questions, I'm sure you had questions too, of what is this Brian Kelly era going to look like? What is this team going to look like? Who's going to be the quarterback? But now we have those answers. And now the bar has been set. In Brian Kelly's first year, the bar set pretty darn high. So how can you build upon that? College football is not linear. Success is not linear. Just ask Jimbo Fisher. One year, you could just barely miss the college football playoff, be the number five team in the country at the end of the 2020 season, and then you turn around two seasons later and you don't even make a bowl game. You lose to App State. Ugh. It's not linear. Just because LSU won 9 regular season games this year and won the West and beat Alabama doesn't mean that they're going to go ahead and do that next year and win 10 or 11 or 12 games. It doesn't mean that they won't do that. But my question is, how can you build upon that? How can you ensure that your year one wasn't a fluke? I don't think it was. I don't think that you can come in the most difficult division and the most competitive conference in college football and have a fluky successful year when you're kind of piecing pieces together in the transfer portal and you're relying a whole lot on contributions from freshmen. I don't think it was fluky at all. But that's my opinion. Prove it to me. Prove it to me in year two that you can build upon that success. It's really hard to beat Alabama 2 years in a row. That's the reason why not a lot of coaches have done it. But that's what Brian Kelly was brought in here to do. It's really hard to win the West every single year, or even year over year, 2 years in a row. That's what Brian Kelly was brought in here to do. So how can you build upon what you did this past year, which was absolutely exceeding expectations? I left that this season feeling so good about this football team, feeling so proud of this football team. Absolutely areas where it can improve, especially from the beginning of the season. But the improvement game over game, week over week throughout the season was encouraging. So how can you improve not just week over week or game over game, but year over year when you're turning over talent and you're having to develop new talent? That's my question. Is prove it to me. It's hard. It is hard to string together successful seasons in the SEC. There is a reason why we consider Nick Saban the best coach of all time. It's because he's been able to do what not a lot of coaches, if any coaches, have been able to do. And that's string together successful seasons and build a dynasty in the most difficult conference and the most difficult division in college football. So do it again. Show it to me again. It's not easy, but you make a lot of money. That's what you brought in here to do, Brian Kelly. So that's my state of the union for LSU football. You feel really good about year one. You're excited about the future. The foundation looks strong and the bar has been set high. So keep pushing it up. And the other two states of the union, LSU basketball and LSU baseball. I want to get into that coming up next. But before we do that, I want to tell you about the only app that you're going to need at your Super Bowl party this year, and that is FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. We're super excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sportsbook in America. Obviously, it is FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that is even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. So download the FanDuel app now so you can bet on Super Bowl 57 with a no-sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you bet on everything from the money line to the point spreads to who will win and who will score a touchdown. So one that I am looking at, I'm looking at Jalen Hurts' anytime touchdown score. In his last 9 games, he's found the end zone in 7 of them. So I think I feel good about Jalen Hurts doing it again against the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. The FanDuel Sportsbook app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. And best of all, you can get paid your winnings instantly. So join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/lockedon to claim your no-sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Well, thanks again for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Make sure that you check out our brand new podcast, Locked On College Basketball. Everything that you need to know about college basketball all in one place. Plus, you can hear from big name experts, insiders, coaches, and players. I love the guys that host this podcast. They're wonderful. They're insightful. They're smart. They're entertaining. So give it a listen. Locked On College Basketball, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. State of the Union was last night, so let's get into my State of the Union. Let's start with LSU baseball, because I think it's kind of following a similar trend, a similar message, similar vibe as to my thoughts about LSU football. And that is the message, at least for me, is prove it to me. LSU is the consensus number one team in the country. That doesn't happen very often. There are like 37,000 different college baseball rankings out there. You got D1Baseball.com. You got USA Today. You got AP. There's so many different baseball rankings out there. And a lot of times going into the season, you'll see some variance across those rankings. It might be the team that won the College World Series before, or the best recruiting class, so on and so forth. But this year, it is all eyes on LSU. Per D1Baseball.com, LSU has three of the top 10 impact transfer portal players. LSU is the only team with multiple impact player transfers in the top 10. And they have three of them. Tommy White, Paul Skeens, and Thatcher Hurd. LSU has the number one recruiting class in the country coming in 2022. There is so much hype and so much love for LSU baseball coming into this season, deservedly so. I mean, I don't think that I can't underestimate just how much talent is coming into this team. Both players with college baseball experience and players that have, you know, been some of the most highly recruited high school players in the country. Players who had the opportunity to go pro, who got drafted in the MLB draft this past summer and forwent that opportunity to come to LSU. So I don't think I can underestimate just how much talent is coming on this team. But we have seen this before with LSU baseball. I don't think to this degree, I don't think to this extent, how much love LSU's been getting, and rightfully so. And I don't think we've ever seen it this much that LSU has been ranked so highly by so many different college baseball pundits. So it's never been to this extent. But we've seen it before. This is not new, where LSU baseball is getting a whole lot of love preseason. And then it comes to fruition in the regular season where they might lose series that they shouldn't lose. And last year, the defense really got stagnant. The defense was bad last year. So there are some things where, you know, there's a lot of hype preseason, and then they might just do silly things to lose silly series that they really weren't supposed to lose. Or they have a string of bad games that put them behind the eight ball. So my thing with LSU baseball is I'm so freaking excited to watch this team. I am so freaking excited to watch LSU run up the scoreboard every single night, because that's what we're promised with the talent on this team. But you got to prove it to me. You got to show it to me. This is a really difficult schedule that LSU baseball is getting into this year. Just look at the first 3 weeks of SEC play. And I know that's, you know, over a month, month and a half away, and you still got non-conference play to get through at the beginning of the season, but let's just look at conference schedule. So in week one of conference play, LSU plays at A&M. They're the preseason number four team in the country. Week two, LSU plays Arkansas, preseason number seven team in the country. Week three, doesn't get any easier because you play Tennessee, preseason number five team in the country. So in the first 3 weeks of conference play, LSU is playing three top 10 teams back to back to back. That is tough. But if you were ranked higher than them, if you're supposed to be better than them, if you have a better recruiting class than them, if you're collecting more transfer portal talent than them, you should be able to not just be competitive with those teams, but beat those teams. And you're not going to sweep all of these teams. You're not going to sweep a Tennessee. And you're not going to sweep a Texas A&M. You're not going to just blow through conference play. That's not my expectation. If that does happen, hell yeah. I love to see that. But I think that the fair expectation for LSU baseball is at least make all of this preseason hype worthwhile and prove to everybody who's given you hype preseason, hey, you didn't give us enough love because we're just that good. And I know that that's kind of a pipe dream, but that's kind of the conversation that we're looking at is, you know, once we get into April, May, June, once we get to Omaha, nobody cares about preseason rankings. Preseason rankings really matter right now because that's all we have to hold on to. So earn it. Earn it every single week. Earn that reputation. Show it to me. And I'm excited to see what Jay Johnson does in year two. I would say in year one, LSU had a fine season. You know, LSU baseball has incredibly high expectations every single year. It's like if you're not hosting a super regional, it's almost like we look at it like a failure. And maybe that's fair. Maybe that's not fair. But I think that, you know, considering the circumstances and in Jay Johnson's first year, I think that LSU had a fine season. What can you do in year two? That's the prove it year in every sport, college football, college baseball. And that's why I think that I approach this baseball season and this upcoming football season in a very similar light of really pumped about it. But you got to prove it to me because it's a year two for two different coaches. And year two is prove it to me year. Now, this one's not as fun. This one is not super fun to talk about. The State of the Union for LSU basketball. Because, woof. They're taking on Mississippi State Wednesday night, tonight, as I'm recording this. Mississippi State is 3-7 in the SEC. Where it stands right now, LSU is second to last in the SEC, only above South Carolina. South Carolina is 1-10 in SEC play. LSU is 1-9. LSU was on a 10-game losing streak. And my State of the Union for that is, although it's really bad, so was the State of the Union going into this season. So was the State of the Union this time last year, or maybe, you know, 10 or so months ago. Will Wade gets fired. It's the FBI wiretap. It's the looming NCAA violations and investigation. It's a tough position where LSU basketball is right now. So I'm approaching it with patience, and I think that we all should approach it with patience, that you cannot rebuild Rome in a day. And that's what Matt McMahon has been tasked to do, is rebuild this program. You're not going to be able to do it in just a season. But I'm looking at it moving forward is, how can you show me that we have more to look forward to next year? That there is a solid foundation being built for this program. That's really, you know, all it is to me is, I'm not asking for a run in the SEC tournament. If we got it, love that. I'm not asking for LSU to be an Elite Eight contender. They're not going to be. They're not going to be a tournament team. But what I am asking is, how can you build? How can you show me that there is a foundation in progress? That's really all it is. And then the State of the Union in women's basketball, I think we're all feeling pretty good about that. And I'm really excited that we are since we are a women's basketball school, truly. This is an undefeated team that's going into a really tough test throughout the rest of the season. It's a gauntlet of a season. And feeling great. Two thumbs up. Shouts out Kim Mulkey, because this team looks like they look unstoppable. Angel Reese looks unstoppable. And this team as a whole looks unstoppable. And so that's, you know, I always say year two is the prove it year, as I just said. So Kim Mulkey in her second year has absolutely proved that this program is absolutely in good hands. But Sunday is going to be a tough day for him because it's the Super Bowl, and the actual Super Bowl is LSU women's basketball versus South Carolina women's basketball, obviously, and Kansas City and Philadelphia are kind of a side thing. So we'll see on Sunday as LSU takes on their most difficult test of the season in Dawn Staley in South Carolina, the number one team in the country. But it is a Mailbag Wednesday, so coming up next, I will get into your questions. Make sure to send in your mailbag questions every single week. We'll get into that coming up next. So it is a Mailbag Wednesday. I appreciate all of y'all for sending in your questions. And you can send in your questions however you would like. You can send them on Twitter at CarolineFenton1. You can tweet them at me. You can DM me. I've gotten mostly DMs and I appreciate those. You can also send them to the Locked On LSU Twitter account at Locked On LSU. You can also comment below on the YouTube channel. I'll collect these questions throughout the week and address them on Wednesday. Let's get into it, because the first question that I got, I think, kind of goes along with the whole theme of State of the Union and the whole theme of looking back and reflecting and looking ahead and setting fair expectations. Samuel texts in and says, what's the biggest disappointment this past year in football in a year full of positives? So what was the biggest disappointment in a year full of positives? I think I highlighted it earlier. I think it's the Texas A&M game. I really do. And, you know, the Florida State game was a kind of a clunker of a way to start the season. But, you know, that was a hard-fought game, and I think we saw improvement even just from the first half to the second half. It definitely didn't make me feel good about the season as a whole, but they learned from it. The Tennessee game absolutely hurt, and it was so bad and so rough and honestly so embarrassing. But more than anything, I think it was the Texas A&M game. Because at that point, you were playing for the opportunity to be the first two-loss team in the history of the college football playoff era to get into the college football playoff. If LSU would have beaten Texas A&M, they probably would have gotten into the college football playoff. Tennessee lost to South Carolina. They got out of the conversation. And then LSU goes into Atlanta with a 10-win regular season. And I don't think that that team would have beaten Georgia, but you would have been, you know, 10-2 in the regular season and bid to the SEC championship. I think that LSU was absolutely building a college football playoff resume. And then you go into College Station and play a Texas A&M team that was so underwhelming, a Texas A&M offense that was honestly horrible. That Texas A&M team had won 4 games. There was no way they're making a bowl game, and you couldn't pull out a win there. And honestly, it wasn't even just like one fluke. LSU just didn't look good that day. So I would say the biggest smudge on the 2022 season was probably that Texas A&M game, considering how much was at stake. Because LSU could have gone into Atlanta with a strong college football playoff resume. And then if they went in and beat Georgia, I really do think they would have been in. Which, again, I don't think would have happened, but still, you know, you would have kept that dream alive going into the SEC championship. Another question says, do you think that NIL is ruining college football? And I'll just say college sports in general. I'll expand that to all of college sports. No, I really don't. And I think that this is a conversation, and I haven't been around for a very long time in college sports. But we get this conversation every single time there's a big change in college football. And of course, NIL is the most massive and seismic change that we've experienced, I think, in college football history, especially in my lifetime. But I'll go back to, you know, the early 2010s-ish, like 2012, 13, 14, when Nick Saban was throwing a freaking fit about up-tempo, spread-out offenses in college football. He thought that was ruining college football. Okay, well, as we see, that's actually made college football really, really fun. And then that's trickled into the pros as well. That's just college football in the modern day. You know, in college football in 2023, you score 40 to 45 to 50 points a game. That's just how the game is going. So then we thought that college football was ruined. And we thought the transfer portal was ruining college football. And now you've seen it actually makes, at least in my opinion, it makes the game a whole lot more interesting. Because now you've got shakeups. And my co-host in Nashville, Derek Mason, a former wide receiver, he played in the league for 15 years. He was telling me about his experience as a former college football player. And he was like, look, when I got in, he went to Michigan State. When he got into Michigan State, you know, when he was being recruited, he was whined and he was dined and he was loved and he was the golden child and he was promised all of these things. And then he got through the doors. And I don't think that this experience was unique to Michigan State. He got on the team and he got within the doors and it was like, okay, you're in, now on to the next. Now on to like the next shiny prize that we can find in the next recruiting class. You know, we don't feel the need to continue to address your needs or continue to praise you or give you what you need or give you playing time because you're already in the door. Where are you going to go? So I do think it's a good thing for the experience of college football where now coaches – now have to continue to recruit their locker room and show players, you know, just how valued they are. I think that improves the players' experience. And I think also the transfer portal has made it so much better for players to find their best opportunities. You know, let's say you're a coach that you loved, you went to that school for that coach recruited you. Maybe that coach got a better job elsewhere. Maybe that coach got fired and now you don't want to be there anymore because you only followed that coach. Well, now you're not forced to stay there anymore. And now you don't have to sit out a year for that anymore if you want to find a better opportunity for yourself. And I know that there are instances of maybe some players abusing the transfer portal and they're just running away from competition and they just want to go where it's easy. And you're going to find that anywhere, in any instance, whenever you open up opportunities in sports, in life, in business, period. But overall, you know, when we thought that the transfer portal was ruining college football, now it just makes things interesting. Young athletes, student athletes, young people, young adults, being able to make money off of the reputations that they have built for themselves, rather than that money just getting funneled into the pockets of, you know, old men who, you know, dominate the athletic program and already have millions and millions of dollars. I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing. And of course, NIL has its flaws. You know, it's a system without any rules or regulations. It's a system without any oversight. It's a system with really no checks and balances. It absolutely has its issues. But I don't think NIL is ruining college football. It's just new. It's just a new era of college football. I always ask myself, in sports, in life, in general, is this a bad thing or is it just a change? Is it a bad change or is it just a change in general? While NIL has its problems, it's not a bad change. It's simply just a change. And last one that I wanted to get into while we were kind of on the topic of baseball, one person asked, how do you think the run rule will affect LSU baseball? And I think that that's a question that's more so like, how do you think the run rule is going to affect college baseball in general? It's not just LSU. I mean, ideally, for LSU, it would make every game a whole heck of a lot shorter because ideally, LSU baseball would be a run rule on everybody. But I pulled up a tweet from Leah Van. She says, last year, this past year, LSU's wins that would have been impacted by the run rule at Florida 16-4, at Mississippi State 13-3 in the top of the eighth, at Vanderbilt 13-2 in the top of the ninth, at Vandy 2 days later, top of the ninth, 21-10. So overall, I mean, you're not shaving a whole lot of time off of these games, and that's not an overwhelming amount of games that were cut short, and then also a loss to Ole Miss 11-1 in the top of the eighth. At least from last year, it's not shaving off a whole lot of time, but I do think it's a good thing overall for college baseball because, I mean, I recall so many like 25-0 games this past year, and it's like, this is silly. Why are you still playing this game? Like, why are we risking the health or the injuries of some of these players in a game that is so obviously a blowout and so obviously out of reach? So ideally, it would affect a lot for LSU in a positive way where games are shorter, they're running up the score, and they can, you know, end the game, move on, rehab, let's go to the next day, let's go to the next series. Last year doesn't show that it would have changed a whole heck of a lot, but it's really nice to have the option. And I'm sure the players appreciate that. I'm sure the coaches appreciate that. And we as viewers, I know we appreciate that because a game that's, you know, going 4 hours long when it's 25-0 is just snooze fest. But thank you to everybody who sent in your questions. Again, I take them every single week on a Wednesday. Send those questions in however you'd like, YouTube, Twitter, you name it. I'll take them. Appreciate you for sending them in. But that's going to do it for me today. Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen today. For your second listen, check out our brand new podcast, Locked On College Basketball. Experts Isaac Shaden and Andy Patton bring you everything that you need to know on and off the court. Plus, you can hear from big name experts, coaches, and players throughout the college basketball landscape. Locked On College Basketball, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.